It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, we'll update you on the Casey Hickox situation in Fort Kent. And I'll talk with Mal Leary about spending in the 2nd Congressional District race. Those stories and your main newscast just ahead, but first, national and world news from NPR. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. Governor Paula Page says that negotiations with nurse Casey Hickox have failed and that the governor will exercise the, quote, full extent of his authority allowable by law. LePage did not specify what that might be. This morning, Hickox defied new state protocols for Ebola home quarantine when she left her Fort Kent home to go on a bike ride. Hickox recently returned from West Africa where she treated Ebola patients and says so far she's symptom-free. More on this story is ahead. Environmental groups in Maine are speaking out against Canadian energy giant TransCanada, which today formally applied for permits to build the largest pipeline in North America. The 3,000-mile-long pipeline would not actually cross into Maine, but comes within 20 miles of the Maine border in Aroostook County. If approved, the Energy East pipeline would transport oil sands from Alberta to refineries and terminals in Quebec and New Brunswick. TransCanada officials claim the $12 billion project is safe and reliable and would support about 14,000 jobs. President Barack Obama is scheduled to arrive at the Portland Expo this evening to rally votes for Democratic candidate for Governor Mike Michaud. The visit is part of several campaign stops Obama's making before next week's midterm elections after months of sitting on the sidelines because of his low approval ratings and unpopularity in some states. Dave Sorensen, spokesman for the Maine Republican Party, says Obama's visit is an attempt to rally the liberal Democratic base after Michaud's efforts failed to do so. He said Republicans would be just as happy if Obama stayed home.
We would say go back to Washington and fix the messes down there that you and Michael Michaud created.
Michaud picked up a pre-Obama boost on Wednesday by earning the endorsement of Angus King, Maine's independent U.S. senator. King originally had endorsed Cutler, but switched to Michaud after Cutler said anyone who doesn't believe he can win should vote for someone else. And supporters of the bear hunting measure on the Maine ballot have filed a complaint with the Maine Ethics Commission, alleging the group leading opposition to the proposal failed to disclose campaign contributions from the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Mainers for Fair Bear Hunting allege that IF&W has made, quote, significant contributions to the Maine Wildlife Conservation Council, claiming that IF&W has contributed many thousands of dollars to the No on One campaign. Katie Hansbury is campaign director for Mainers for Fair Bear Hunting.
Reporting requirements are a very important part of the transparency that voters rely on when making decisions when casting their ballots. And so we're not only concerned about Inland Fisheries and Wildlife's improper use of public funds to campaign and influence the outcome of this election, but also on the No campaign's failure to disclose IF&W's extensive expenditures.
Several ads against the measure have featured IF&W employees. James Cote, campaign manager for the Save Maine Bears Hunt No on One campaign, says this is another frivolous attempt to muzzle wildlife experts. He says IF&W is simply doing its job educating the public. It's 22 minutes before 6 o'clock. The most scrutinized nurse in America, that's Casey Hickox, went for a bike ride this morning, and in the process, she violated Maine State Ebola protocols for home quarantine. Hickox is under watchful eye ever since she returned to Fort Kent earlier this week from both the state police and the media. Patty White has the latest on the nurse who recently treated Ebola patients in West Africa.
You could call it a media frenzy. About 24 local and national media cars line the street outside the house Casey Hickox shares with her boyfriend. Reporters chat with each other and to their editors on their phones. A cluster of camera tripods are positioned directly across from the house. People and their equipment are ready to spring into action whenever Hickox emerges.
I have a shot of a
The first chance came around 9 a.m. Thursday, when Hickox and her partner Ted Wilbur casually but quickly rode bicycles down their driveway and around the corner with a stream of media cars and state police in pursuit. The couple turned off down a trail and left most of the media behind. When they returned to their house about an hour later, Hickox said she didn't see any reason not to go.
There's no legal action against me, so I'm free to go on a bike ride in my hometown.
Hickox says she's hoping to find middle ground with the state of Maine, which requires individuals who've treated Ebola patients to self-quarantine in their homes.
I hope We can go back into negotiations today.
Hickox says she wants to get back to normal life and mentioned to reporters Wednesday that she was craving pizza from local Fort Kent restaurant, the Moose Shack. Staff at the Moose Shack decided to send Hickox a pizza on Thursday and fielded phone calls from across the country from people offering to pay for it. The Moose Shack sought police permission to deliver but never got a response. Late Thursday afternoon, they delivered what they say is one of Hickox's favorites, pepperoni, black olive, and mushroom. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Maine Governor Paula Page says the state's not been able to reach a self-quarantine agreement with Hickox and that he's ready to exercise his authority to protect the public. In his weekly radio address, LePage says he understands healthcare workers like Hickox are eager to get home after working with Ebola patients abroad.
But we will be vigilant in our duty to protect the health and safety of all Mainers. Since we are a border state, we must also consider the fact that a person who has been exposed to Ebola could cross into Canada. As governor, I have to weigh the inconvenience of an in-home quarantine for one individual against the public health and safety for all 1.3 million Mainers.
LePage has also said that the state was willing to agree to arrangements that would have allowed Hickox to go for walks, runs, and bike rides while preventing her from going into public places or coming within 3 feet of others. The state previously vowed to go to court to have Hickox confined to her home against her will for the remainder of the 21-day incubation period for Ebola that ends on November 10th. State and national medical organizations have joined civil rights groups and others in opposing the LePage administration's protocols for health workers returning from West Africa, like Casey Hickox. Today, the American Nurses Association and the Maine Medical Association criticized the state's requested 21-day quarantine for Hickox as unnecessary, unscientifically based, and apt to create a climate of more fear. As Susan Sharon reports, the ACLU of Maine is also prepared to defend Hickox's civil rights.
In an op-ed scheduled for publication in the Portland Press-Herald on Friday, former state epidemiologists, state health officers, and other physicians in Maine asked political leaders to be guided by science and not emotion. An epidemic of fear can be as deadly as an epidemic with a virus, they wrote. The science and experience of many indicates that Ebola is not contagious before symptoms occur.
The stakes get higher every hour.
Gordon Smith is the executive vice president of the Maine Medical Association, whose president and other members signed on to the open letter.
When all the national news media is sitting in Fort Kent, reporting minute by minute on the activities of Casey, that then sends a message to the public.
And that message, says Smith, is that Hickox's presence is a big deal in Fort Kent, and there must be some kind of health threat to themselves and their families. As evidence of that, Smith says he's been getting calls from Fort Kent area physicians who are concerned that their patients are being misinformed and are putting off necessary health treatment as a result.
For instance, there have been cases canceled. Patients have called the Northern Maine Medical Center and canceled their cases because of, you know, their fear that somehow having Casey in town will somehow imperil their hospital.
Smith says it's important for health professionals to quell such fears. In their op-ed, Maine physicians point out that bodily fluids, such as blood and vomit, are most infectious at the very end stages of Ebola. They say that is why the only two people to have contracted the virus in the United States are two nurses who cared for a patient in Texas at the very end of his life. And they say that everyone should have assurances with the facts.
I am a little bit concerned that we haven't heard more from Dr. Panette, you know, who is our state health officer at present.
Dr. Lonnie Graham was the state's health officer from 1990 to 1996 and is one of those who signed the letter. Reached by cell phone, Graham says quarantining of all healthcare workers without symptoms upon their return from caring for Ebola patients may be well-intended, but is not supported by science or experience. But that's what Dr. Sheila Panette and other state officials are proposing. It's a move more restrictive than called for by the Federal Centers for Disease Control, which also recommends monitoring. Allison Bie of the ACLU of Maine says as long as Hickox is self-monitoring and remains asymptomatic, she doesn't pose a risk to the public, and there's no medical or legal basis to isolate her.
The state is claiming that there's a public health risk, and under state law, they would have to show a clear and imminent threat. And when someone is not infectious, the legal authority for making that claim is dubious.
BA says the ACLU will be monitoring Hickox's situation carefully and, if necessary, will intervene to protect her civil rights. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
You're listening to MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to Maine Things Considered. It's come to our attention that part of this broadcast did not make it to air due to a technical problem and that you may have missed some of our Maine newscast. We will have another update on Maine news for you at 6:04, and you can find all of our stories and all of today's news at news.mpbn.net. We regret the inconvenience and thanks for understanding. Now, your weather forecast is coming in just a few minutes, but first, spending in the race for Maine's open second congressional district seat is setting new records. Mal Leary joins us now from our Augusta studios. Mal, based on what you've told me the last few times we've talked, it seems like spending is just setting records all over the place in this election. Are the numbers in the second district really all that exceptional?
I think many people will think that they are when they look at these, Nora. Just a few years ago, for example, 2008, two candidates together spent less than $700,000 for their campaigns. Already the spending by the three candidates in the race this year in the second district, their Republican Bruce Poliquin, Democrat Emily Kane, and Independent Blaine Richardson, have gone over the $5 million mark. And there are still several days of spending, most likely some heavy spending, until we reach Election Day.
Now, is this just the candidates themselves and what they're spending, or is this, as I suspect, independent spending on behalf of the candidates as well?
The total is both the candidates' campaigns and all that independent spending we're seeing. Emily Kane's campaign has spent over $1.4 million so far. Bruce Poliquin's campaign has spent over $1.2 million. Now, the independent of the race, Blaine Richardson, has spent less than $6,000, so he's really not figuring in all of these amounts at all. It is the independent spending by several groups, from the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee to the National Education Association Advocacy Fund, that's driving all this money. And nearly every day we're seeing additional spending reports being filed by groups, so the money they spend will exceed candidate campaign expenditures.
Wow. So additional reports you mentioned, are those required disclosures or what?
Yes, they are required by federal law. The Federal Elections Commission says any significant contributions of expenditures in the last weeks before the election have to be disclosed by an electronic filing system with the commission within 24 hours. For shorthand, they're called 24-hour reports. But there have been so many filed nationally that the FEC's website has a notice on it that some reports are being delayed because the site has been overwhelmed.
Those numbers, does that include the disclosure of all those ads that we see on TV that are not ads for a candidate, but ads against the other guy?
It does, and it certainly does get confusing when you go through the reports. In fact, Nora, as many dollars are being spent to oppose Poliquin and Kane as are being spent to support their election. And we're not just talking about those seemingly endless television ads in the football game, but there are also radio ads, mailers, flyers being distributed door to door. And this year, more than we've seen in past elections, there's a lot of negative ads popping up on your computer screen when you open a browser or you go on Facebook.
Yeah, those are really interesting. I'm wondering what they're going to fill up the internet with once the election is over.
That is an interesting question, but I'm sure they'll find something.
Okay, Mal Leary, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nora.
It's 12 minutes before 6. Time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
Clouds will slowly vanish this evening. A few remain draped over the county. Upper 20s in the interior hollows, mid-30s at the ocean's edge. Tomorrow, a quiet and seasonably cool day. Morning sun will slowly yield to thickening high afternoon clouds, brightest along the coast. Low 40s to low 50s north to south. Saturday, a bipolar dumbbelling ocean storm will draw all eyes. Cloudy, windy, and raw with afternoon rain showers, flurries north and mountains, 40 statewide. Uncertainty abounds Saturday night. At this point, I'm opting for snow across the mountains and north of Holton, rain ending as flurries elsewhere. Very blustery and cold Sunday. Flurries for all but the coastal plain west of Belfast, where slivers of sun will appear. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And at 11 minutes before 6, that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Keith Shortall, Ed Morin, and A.J. Higgins. I'm Nora Flaherty.